Welcome, everyone. There is one word that I want you to remember. You're going to hear it over and over and over again. And I dare say that it will very soon be a household word. Avita, avita, avita. In just a moment, you're going to hear what that's all about and why we have asked Jeff Bailey to be with us today, because we have some really exciting things to talk about. But first, let me welcome you officially. I, of course, am Marcy Newman, your Heart Shift coach, and you're listening to Heart Shift Radio, and I want to thank each and every one of you for being here. It's really such a blessing for me, and I have to say, it's like one of my greatest joys to be here with you. So I want to dig in here. So I want to tell you a little bit about Jeff Bailey, and I want to start by telling you how he came into my life. So a couple of years ago, I was having some issues with my hip, and they were definitely connected to some congestion of energy that was associated with some grief I was carrying. And I met Jeff at his yoga studio in Boulder, which is where I was living at the time, and was introduced to the most, how shall I describe Jeff? The softest, kindest, most caring man I think I have ever met. And so knowledgeable about healing and about really personifying what yoga always meant to me, but I had never really experienced it until I met Jeff. So Jeff is the owner of the Yoga Loft in Boulder, and now also has another facility in Gunnbarrel in Colorado. And we're going to hear more about that in a moment, but I want to just tell you a little bit about him and how he got to where he is. And again, emphasizing what I have found to be the difference between talking a talk and walking a walk. And Jeff, I'm going to say you personify truly both talking and walking your talk. So, well,
thank you, Marcy.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to welcome you. Jeff, welcome. Be part of this gathering right here and right now. Jump in. And yeah, just be present. Let everybody know you're here.
Oh, well, thank you, Marcy. That's so sweet. Those words are just so, heartwarming. And I'm just very grateful for you and your show and getting to know you and working with you in the classroom and everything. That's just, it's having you in my life is a gift. Thank you.
All right, everybody. So let me just tell you a little bit about Jeff. Originally from Colorado. And I love how he says this. He said, I remember walking out of his first yoga class, feeling as if he had taken his first full breath. I'm really just going to quote him. I want you to get to know him in the heart of this man. He says, I fell in love with the physical and spiritual intelligence of the practice of yoga and never stopped. He has a very diverse background, both in yoga, many traditions, and Jeff, I'll have you tell us about that. But also, Jeff, you used to be a rolfer, didn't you?
Yeah, I was a rolfer through the 90s, basically, when I first moved to Boulder in 1990. I had all this interest in yoga. I had been studying it for about 6 years or so, and different traditions, and I've wanted a way to integrate yoga more into my life and to be able to help people. And that's when I landed on Rolfing. And as life often has it, it was an accident. I had a kind of a strange ski injury and did quite a bit of damage to my knee, and not enough damage where doctors wanted to do anything to it, but enough to where I could hardly walk. And that just, I saw the word Rolfing pop into my life. And so I went to a training and had some of the best hands out there on my body. And I absorbed not only the work, but the philosophy behind it. And I said, oh, well, here's the answer. So I integrated Rolfing and yoga into my life. And for those who may not know, Rolfing is a hands-on modality where we work specifically with connective tissue in the body to help release it and to create more mobility in the body. But Ida Rolf, the founder, had a really beautiful, systematic way, beautiful philosophy behind it. You know, it just wasn't what you did, it was how you did it that really mattered, and I was really drawn to that.
Mm. If I could quote something else that Jeff has written here, he says, I have found that with a curious and self-forgiving approach, yoga can heal almost anything if we are willing to use life's challenges to get closer to the healing power of mind and body. So, our listeners out there, is there anyone else that you would want to teach you yoga? I mean, this is really the ultimate opportunity. And the reason that I've asked Jeff to be here is because, as you can see, Jeff has a very natural ability to blend modalities. He was talking about the Rolfing and how he blended it with yoga. So this comes very naturally to him. And by the way, I know that we didn't name them, but you have certifications and training in lots of different yogas, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've studied with a lot of different teachers over the years. I was drawn to teachers and their workshops mostly. And then I ended up with a formal certification through Yoga Works, which has become kind of a national brand. And then I studied in a yoga ashram here in Boulder back in like 1992 and got a 200-hour certification through them. And then I sponsored my own 300-hour certification at Yoga Loft and got that. So I got formal certifications, but honestly, the biggest knowledge I've had was probably a Rolfing training. The Rolfing training was the best yoga training I think I'd ever had. And it really taught me so much about the structure of the body and how it's held together and the importance of working with what we often call the shiny white stuff. You know, and when you look at an anatomy chart, you see the muscle, and that's usually what we give so much attention to. But come to find out, if you work with the shiny white stuff, specifically in and around the joints, you are able to access the nervous system, and the nervous system runs everything. And so if you don't develop a relationship with your own mind, accessed through the bones, through the joints, through the connective tissue in the nervous system, you almost have nothing, which is a maybe a hard blanket statement. But going for physical fitness and going for movement and all the things that we kind of endeavor to do athletically is one thing, but yoga that heals and yoga that creates mobility and yoga that works with the underlying physiology and the body and the mind to really evoke positive, lasting change, that's a whole different ballgame.
It's very interesting how you really have combined the knowledge that you have from Rolfing and from yoga, because I don't think I have ever heard it quite said like that before, honestly. And I know that you said it was a pretty bold blanket statement, but from my perspective, it really gives me a very clear-cut picture about what I'm doing when I'm in that framework of connecting my body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, you've been in the room, you've been in those classes, and you know it's so powerful.
Yeah. So, Avita, this is your new baby. This is your your new development, we might say, right? And where you're taking yoga to this incredible next level. First of all, let me just ask you, Jeff, I've heard it said before, but I want you to just share with our audience, what is yoga to you?
Oh, what is yoga to me?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's everything. It is everything. I mean, it's my life has been centered around it. Okay, most people have heard yoga joints. The Sanskrit English translation of yoga is yoga joins. It's joining. It means union, yoking, bringing together. And this takes me all the way back to my very first class in Gunnison with my first teacher who had such a profound impact on my life, as often our first teachers do. And I remember asking him, so what does yoga mean? What's the whole idea here? And he said, well, yoga means to join. And then I immediately thought to myself, why does yoga mean to join? If all we ever do is really stretch and pull ourselves apart, where's the whole thing with yoga joining? And so I had to, there was a little bit of a paradox there for me, but it stuck. Like, this word was so powerful to me. And so as I went out and I traveled a lot through my 20s, I actually led bicycle tours for a company in New England for many years. And I would teach yoga to the groups. I just had so much fun doing that. And I would, in my travels, I would just go study with different teachers. And I would always ask that question. I never really got a good answer. And so I had to figure it out myself. I had to dig deep. And I kept asking that question. And one day when I first moved to Boulder, Colorado, I'm sitting on the floor practicing my yoga, Upavishta Konasana, and I look up on the shelf, and there on the shelf, my roommates had the book, these three blue books, A Course in Miracles. And I thought, wow, that looks interesting. So I opened them up, and the word join just jumped off the page to me. It was so weird.
There was your answer.
I thought, I don't know what this is about. The words didn't make even a whole lot of sense to me, but I knew that I had to dig into this. And so that became the next chapter in my spiritual journey. And it was over the course of the following 17 years of working in and out of that book. Anybody who's ever studied it knows it's a daunting task. But once you have the taste for what that book seems to really symbolize, you just don't want to stop. We want the truth. We want to know the answers to life's deepest questions. And that's what, oh my God, you asked me what yoga is. We could spend 2.5 hours just talking about that. But when we join, the sages must have known that we believe that we are separate from something. And believe is the word. It's actually impossible to be separate. But if we believe we are, then there's our work. Somehow we have to do the work to realize we never left our oneness. We never left perfect love, and that's who we are. You know that.
Yes.
And so any spiritual path, regardless of what it is a journey back to a home we never left. Mm-hmm. And so yoga is this beautiful modality where we get to use the body as a vehicle. We get to use these shapes and this amazing history of this practice. We get to use it as a way to get in touch with who we really are. And that may sound cliche to somebody who's never been to an Avita yoga class, but with the right intention behind it, it becomes a very, very powerful self-study where we not only get to join with who we are and get closer to that reality, but we get to heal our bodies at the same time. We get to create more mobility. We get to create more vibrancy and more health. And no matter who you are, whether you're a super athlete or a super bus driver or whatever it is that you do, we want to do it with joy and freedom. And this is a practice that can help people get that.
So you talk about A Course in Miracles as being such a life changer for you. Have you integrated those principles in this new program, Avita? Is the spirituality that you learned or you contacted with in A Course in Miracles present there?
Well, absolutely. I can't separate that from anything I do, really, but it's not the material. I don't reference the material. I don't even really reference the book. But and we may talk about the book I wrote here in a little bit, but the underlying essence of A Course, the underlying essence of the Yoga Sutras, the underlying essence of Christianity and Buddhism and Hinduism, the underlying essence of all of them is a shared common truth. Socrates called it a shared goodness. He believed that we all had this goodness that we could tap into. And of course, Plato, his famous student, acknowledged all that and kind of carried on the tradition. And what happens over time is that we get trapped in the word. We get trapped in the dogma and we forget about the essence. And then somewhere along my studies, I stumbled upon this beautiful thing called the perennial philosophy. And the perennial philosophy states that, first let me say that the perennial philosophy came out of the Neo-Vedanta. And then Aldous Huxley, who most of us have heard of, Aldous Huxley wrote a book called the perennial philosophy, and he is the one that made it a little more famous. And what it states, quite simply, there's three succinct bullet points to the definition of it. And the first one is that we all share a common, fill in the blank, a common truth, a common love, a common oneness, a common goodness, a common reality. So there's something common to all of us. The yogi sages thought it was just this. In a world of change, they wanted to find a constant. There had to be something constant. Anyway, that constant is available to all of us, number one. Number two, we each have it within our ability to find it and discover it. And number three, the purpose of a lifetime, the whole reason we're here, is to discover it. And once you kind of own that at a heart level, to borrow some words from A Course in Miracles, the destination is as certain as love itself. Mm. So in that sense, we cannot fail. And I think what a mistake that a lot of us tend to do is we hold it out there as something that only the great sages or only certain people are ever available to find and join with, but the truth of the matter is it's there for all of us. And it's the only way we'll ever find peace on earth is to find it in ourselves first.
I mean, I think the way you just presented that, first off, does have ultimate truth woven within it. But I think also that there is an opportunity for our listeners to really take this in. Because what you're describing is a truth that transcends all separation. So anything anything that anyone would define as a separating force just melts in the presence of this truth. Because it's the same regardless of which direction you find yourself facing.
Exactly. And that's why I oftentimes say, when we can't do the yoga we want, all becomes yoga. And so we come to the mat, we come into the studio, and we practice with a teacher, and we practice with those around us, and we practice. We put ourselves in awkward positions so we can find the peace regardless, and so we can challenge the body and challenge the body physiologically to promote healing. That's what we do in the room. But then we go out into the world, and then life throws us these curveballs. It throws things at us. We never know quite what's going to come our way. But as they come our way, if we can begin to take responsibility for them, as if they themselves are the teacher, and then are able to go inside and say, wow, okay, how can I work through this now in a way that joins, in a way that brings me closer to my reality instead of driving me deeper into depression or deeper into fear or deeper into insecurity or deeper into lack? And that's the work. And as we do that, we realize we have very powerful minds that can choose one or the other. And there's the definition of yoga again. In Yoga Sutras number 1.2, it defines yoga as yoga chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the ability to choose against the modified mind, or the ability to choose against separation and join with our whole mind, the original mind. And that is a skill that we can develop. And the more we do it, the more we're able to choose a joined way of moving through our lives. And that part of our mind always has our highest, best interest in mind.
So is this the basis of your Avita?
Well, I mean, I didn't... this got kind of deep fast, but that's what we do together.
Yeah,
right?
We do.
We do this. So we do get into some beautiful philosophy. We go through the Yoga Sutras. We will look at the Bhagavad Gita. We look, and maybe some of the students even have things that they want to bring forth and hold to the light. And so we look at things in this, in the paradigm of the perennial philosophy, and say, what is the essence? What is this underlying message? Because too often, way too often, we'll take a writing, we'll take a philosophy, and then we meld it and we make it into what we want it to be. And then we get into trouble. And we miss the whole point because we're unwilling to do the hard work. And it is hard work because it's changing our minds. But we're afraid, I mean, on one level, we're afraid of the power we have to do that. But then we're also afraid of letting go of the familiar.
Right.
And the familiar is oftentimes so painful and so harmful and so unproductive, but we cling to it because it's all we know. And there again, that's part of one of the underlying messages of nearly every spiritual thought system out there, is this concept of forgiving or letting go or taking the road less traveled. You know, it's a gentle path that joins.
So, I mean, what you're really describing is that in your classroom, not only are you providing structure for the body to heal, for the mind to sort of repossess itself, but
to join with itself. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're also describing that you're providing a foundation that is ancient in its roots and yet very contemporary in its ability for us to take into the outside world. And I mean, it just sounds phenomenal, seriously, that that you've developed this program. How did you come to all this?
By practicing what I'm talking about right now. I just get out of the way. I have to, it's an ongoing practice for me. So what I share with my students, I'm practicing it right now with you, Marcy. I'm relinquishing any idea of Jeff Bailey, quite honestly, and I'm joining with something bigger. I'm joining with my healed mind, and I'm joining you there, and that's why we're able to have a conversation like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I have a couple lectures that I love to talk about creativity, the power of creativity, and how creativity, real creativity, is a process of joining with your creative mind. The healed mind happens to also be the creative mind. And that's why we get so many great things throughout history, the timeless things, whether it is a musical composition or a conductor, a composer, a painter, a sculptor, all kinds of greats come to mind probably as I say those things. But the ones that are timeless literally come through the creative mind. They come through from a outside of time and space into time and space. And that is real creativity. Now, the ego can be super innovative. Innovation, we're surrounded by innovation, but real creativity that comes through through the fingers, through the pen, through the brush, through the tongue, through the body, that there are many different channels, but that's how we want to live our lives. We're all artists. We're all artists, and it doesn't matter what the vehicle is, or it doesn't matter what the outlet is at all. The work we do becomes most fulfilling when we're able to give it this higher purpose, to either watch how it separates us, watch how we hate it, we're not aligned with it, we may not want to be with it, so we have to make a choice. Can I stay in this and work through it and make it my teacher, make it my healer, and work from a healed perspective in something that I thought I didn't like? Or it's time to make a shift and get into something that I can resonate with, and now the light and the creativity get to come through, and I get to be a vehicle for that. But see, that's all stuff. That's a lecture in the class, because to be a good yoga teacher, you want to be able to work toward that perspective. Perfection is not required. You just have to really want that kind of clarity and freedom and creativity.
So
it's available to all of us.
It is available to all of us. I have to say I've learned so much since being in your classes, and of course also having some recorded classes that I continue to practice to. And what was interesting to me, and this was the first time that it ever happened to me while in a yoga class, and that was that I've actually had a couple of out-of-body experiences, and, you know, where I get into such a deep meditative pose, and yet I'm very conscious that I'm present, but I will see... It's interesting because all of a sudden I will see myself sort of in repetitive locations. I mean, it's just so interesting to me. I'll go into a pose and then all of a sudden I'm sort of like transported to another place. And it's repetitive. I experience it it reoccurs.
Yeah.
And I've never experienced that before, Jeff. What's that
It's amazing,
about?
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
What does it open within us that gives us access beyond time or space?
Well, it has to do with the intent of the practice. And maybe I should say a little bit about the practice. Any given hour-long practice, there could be anywhere from as few as 5 or 6 poses to as many as, I don't know, maybe 15 or 16. And how many poses there are in a class dictates the pace of the class. So we oftentimes spend a lot of time in a given shape. And as you know, we are not avoiding sensation. We are not, let me say it differently, we're not seeking comfort in the class. We
Right.
are very thoughtfully, very carefully using the shape to elicit a sensation that stimulates a healing physiology in the body. And that alone right there makes it different than any other yoga out there. Okay?
Yes.
That intent is everything. And that's what makes it work physically. I could go into all the physiology behind that, but not here. Now, the moment you get in touch with that sensation that your body has been craving, it's been wanting you to go there for many years, and now you're there, and now you're there, and you're being guided along the way. It's very nice to be guided through this practice, and then your mind basically gets to shut down as you normally know it, and it begins to join. First, you join with the sensation, and then you start to slip past the sensation itself, and then you achieve what, I mean, we could call it samadhi. Your mind is both empty and full.
Mm.
And that's what makes the practice really a moving meditation. I know a lot of my students come, just they think of it as their tri-weekly meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some of them, it's daily. They come, and this is a practice. You can practice daily and not overdo it. So, does that help?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it just makes perfect sense to me, and a great description of it as well, because as you said, you're not avoiding anything in this practice. You are, what I found
yes.
is so unique about it is that I was constantly inviting it to me. So,
yeah, you want it.
I want it. Right, so
mm-hmm.
I'm inviting the merge,
mm-hmm.
and found
yep.
that I could be so present in that in ways that were so different for me.
It's amazing. People walk into the class for the first time and they stumble into the class the way I stumbled into my first class, and they don't even know why they're there. But maybe somebody told them to come, or the other class that they wanted to take wasn't available, or they just missed it. They come in and they have this idea, you know, and all of a sudden in one of the first poses, they're like, you can almost hear their thoughts and their body just hit the floor. It's like, oh my God. And then they'll, I had a gal in a class like that today, young, athletic, ready to burn calories kind of thing. And there was a little resistance at first, and then about midway through the class, it just landed, and bam, it just, and then she walked out going, oh my God, what did I just do?
Yeah.
She's like, I want to do more of that, you know, it's sometimes rare for young people to really have an attraction to it, because they're, the more deeply desirous we are of athleticism and burning calories and really accomplishing stuff in an outer directed way, it's harder to turn your mind around and just slow down, go inside and heal. But at some point we all end up there at some point.
And I know that I've heard you say that before, Jeff. It's not about accomplishing.
No, I say that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing to accomplish in an outer-directed way. Even on an inner-directed way, the moment we get in the mindset that, like, oh, I've got to get my knee to my chest, or I've got to get blah, 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 all kinds of ways to put the body. The moment we develop that kind of an agenda, it's the moment that it stops being yoga.
Mm. Well, it certainly stops being Avita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then it becomes an endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment we activate the mind like that to endeavor to be something, it's basically subconsciously saying that what I am right now is not okay. And that's the beginning of a duality. And the yoga, this yoga joins that our primary objective is to dissolve the duality.
Excellent point. So it requires then that we start in a place of acceptance.
It's big. Yeah, and that can take some people a long time to learn, but we get glimmers of it. You know, that's why we call it a practice. We get glimmers of just really accepting ourselves as we are here and now. And for whatever reason, I have this knee pain that I just, it's driving me crazy. I'm limping. I can hardly walk or whatever. And I don't want it anymore. Well, you have it. Not wanting it or wishing it away or judging it or damning it is not going to be helpful. So at some point, we finally choose an alternative. We say, all right, I'm going to accept this. And immediately, once there's real acceptance, the chemistry inside the body starts to change. Your mind starts to change. Hormones start to change. Everything starts to change. And now the body is allowed to begin a healing process. And then, and so physiologically speaking, that starts to take place, which leads to better health. And then the different ways that we might work with knee pain or knee problem actually, even more specifically, help resolve an injury like that.
So what I'm hearing you say is how essential it is that we stop judging ourselves, because
yeah.
Judging ourselves
and
in any way,
while we're, yeah,
really has very self-sabotaging effects.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the moment you judge, you create an other. You reinforce the whole idea of separate self. And so, you know, judgment and happiness cannot coexist. Judgment and peace cannot coexist. Judgment and creativity cannot coexist.
Two different ends of the scale in terms of
yeah.
vibrational frequency.
Yeah. And but many of us go through our lives constantly judging. So we're constantly really at war with ourselves.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to hear that you've put together a teacher training program. I mean, this is huge, huge.
It's huge. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's so much fun. I mean, we have so much fun, and we ask the hard questions, and we churn, and we share each other's, you know, stories and histories and everything that has ever happened to us. And I'll speak personally, everything that's ever happened to me, good or bad, right or wrong, painful or not painful, it's what makes me who I am as a body and form. And that becomes part of my resource, because I can think back on a knee injury, or I can think back on a hip injury, or think back on a bicycle fall, or this or that. And that helps me relate to the person in front of me. And so there is no yoga experience required for Avita yoga. There's no prior teacher training experience.
Amazing.
Yeah. No, in fact, some of the greatest teachers and some of the students who kind of catch on the quickest are oftentimes the ones that come in fresh and have never had any yoga. But, you know, if yoga is part of your life like it was me, then what I just said applies. You'll rely on every single thing that's ever happened. Your entire history becomes a data point. who you are, and that's what makes you, that's what enables you or in each individual student to take the essence of the training and own it and make it theirs and be able to share it from a very empowered place. That's what it's about.
So, you know, I do a lot of work with people with self-forgiveness. It sounds to me that there's an awful lot of self-forgiveness that takes place while learning this practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does, but it's not a word we use very often. Mm-hmm. It's I try to stay away from any kind of label. When we have a conversation like this, we can use a word like that.
Yeah.
And occasionally that word will come out of my mouth during a class or something. But, and that's one of the things you learn as a student, is you've got to watch using words that are triggering and use words that are disarming and use words that help people join with who they are. And so we're very, very reluctant in the class to point out issues or problems, and we want to inspire. I mean, right now I'm thinking of one of the Yoga Sutras. It's I can't remember the exact number, but it's high up in the first book, like 143 or something like that. And it potentially talks about mixing name, form, and knowledge, which to most people is like, what in the heck is he talking about there? But he's talking about blending. He's talking about getting away from judgment and away from separation and the way we use labels. And so when we are able to blend the knowledge of something with the name of something and the form of something, the label goes away. And now we're able to access a higher part of our mind that is able to come through, because we have just taken one more step of dissolving the whole idea of separation.
Well, that's kind of how I see the self-forgiveness. It is, you know, the letting go that allows the self-acceptance. It's never outside of the self. It's always, you know, within the self, and coming to that place of accepting ourselves as we are, as you said, the history of we, right? The history that we have, that we're presenting with, and being able to accept it on a very deep, heartfelt level as, you know, just being exactly where we are to start.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes us right back, beginner's mind, the whole way. Beginner's mind is a beginner comes into anything with humbleness and humility, and as we advance and we learn more and we gain more knowledge, the beginner's mind says, "I stay humble." I remind myself in a way, on some level, I know nothing. And then that's the tricky part of the whole thing, is the more I'm able to say I know nothing, the more I'm able to tune in to everything and really make myself available. And so that's what makes me and you a great student, no matter how or what we endeavor to do as teachers.
So it's that curious mind, as you said, combined with a mindfulness, right, that really allows us to continue to explore. Well, I'm really excited about your teacher training.
You'll be joining us, right, Marcy?
You know what? I'm really hoping to. The more I think about it, the more I talk about it, I'm so drawn to it. And
well, you're a natural teacher, that's for sure.
Oh, thanks. I'm really excited about having Avita teachers around the world.
Yeah, me too.
This is
the beginning.
The thought
of something I think really grand. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I agree. You know, it is the beginning of something really grand. And when I think about just the depth of the teachings and how simple you've made it, how simple you've made it to be in the practice, to be feeding all the different parts that need to be integrated for the wholeness, right, that we want to connect with.
That's exactly it, yeah.
I just think that it's going to have a tremendous, tremendous effect on the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, we come here to heal. And I honestly think this practice is one of the most amazing things. It is a gift from heaven, it feels like, because it's so healing for the body. It's amazing. I mean, I have people of all ages. I mean, it's truly a yoga for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I have two couples in their 80s who come, you know, 2 to 3 times a week.
Oh,
and
God bless
they
them.
Have, oh, man, they have a ball, and they're every time they talk about the gains they've made, and without going into too much detail there, I mean,
sure.
And injuries, all kinds of stuff, people avoiding hip replacements, knee replacements, people who've had hip replacements and want to get better. I mean, it's just, it's really, it's powerful work.
Yeah.
And behind it all, you know, we make it largely, oh man, how do I even say this? You know, we work on the body. Let's face it. We bring our bodies into the room and we work on them. We use them to access our healed mind.
Oh my God, say that again. It was so beautiful.
Well, we bring our bodies into the room because that's what we have. We come into this world with a body that needs help. It's time and gravity and karma and genetics are all working kind of against us all the time. So at some point we have to reconcile that, and we have to, it's a gift to be able to walk into a room and have a practice like a Vita Yoga that helps the body in so many ways. And yet we use it as a moving meditation to access our healed mind. And see, that is that's what I call the cycle of healing. There's a cycle of pain, where we get pain and we react and we try to remove the pain. Pain is the messenger. If you stop and think, and this is hard for people to wrap their mind around, they assume pain is the problem. Pain is never the problem. It's pointing to a problem. So then we try to cut it out, we try to get rid of it, we reach for a pill, we're basically shooting the messenger. But if we can learn to work with it, And we have a tool like these yoga poses where we're able to start to work with it and resolve it a little bit, then we change our relationship to pain. And that is unlike anything anybody ever does in this world. And that's why we get results.
Mm.
Very predictable results. It's pretty cool.
It's just amazing. And having been in so many classes now, I can attest to the miraculous healing, because not only have I experienced it myself, I can now run and jump and play and do all the kinds of things that I love to do, and know exactly what to do also should I start to feel some tightening or discomfort.
Yeah, you have resources now, don't you?
I have resources. I have tools. Yeah. I know exactly what to do. And that's what makes it so amazing. My body just calls for it now. And I saw how people's hearts and minds and bodies opened in room after room after room. I saw how we came together as a community, as real, caring, loving individuals. These are people.
It's so awesome.
We just came to a yoga class. This is not even teacher training that I'm talking about. And yet when we left, you could just tell so often we didn't want to leave. We, you know, our arms would be around each other. There is something that happens in that room that I have never experienced anywhere else, other than I don't even know, like maybe some deep heart opening retreat that I went on or something, but that's what you experience every time you walk into a classroom. It's amazing.
It's a gift. It's amazing. Yeah, no, it's it just seems like it shouldn't even be a thing. It's just outrageous.
It is outrageous, outrageously wonderful. So, okay, tell our audience about the teacher training. And I love, again, please emphasize, you don't need any previous experience either with yoga or with yoga teaching, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You don't need, if you like people, the one thing that I have noticed is people who have a little bit of a teaching background or have some, have been in front of groups a little bit, that kind of experience can be really helpful. But we practice that, you know, we practice, you know, to stand up in front of a group, people, you've heard this before, people assume you're the leader. So we have to learn some leadership skills, and we learn group dynamic skills, and we learn how to create a container, a safe container for the room. And because it's in a container where bodies get to come together, where the magic really happens. We do privates, but the reason we do a private is somebody really needs some special care. But our goal is in 1, 2, 3 private sessions, they're in the room with everybody else. And that's why we do privates. So the teacher training, let's see, what did you ask me?
So tell us about the training itself, because I know you have one coming up. When is the next training starting?
It starts July 26th, and anybody can go to our website, yogaloftboulder.com, and click on the Avita tab, and you'll see the teacher training come up. It begins July 26th. There are 6 4-day weekends spread out over 6 months. So it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and each day we'll have 2 classes daily, one in the morning, usually one in the afternoon. We do the class, and we discuss it, we process it, and we understand the intent behind each shape and the intent behind the whole sequence, because it's not just the shape or the pose, it's how they're put together. Each sequence has its own intent. So we learn that, and the students over the course of the 6 months will end up with 50 pre-written sequences. So they'll have those for their own practice, which is golden. They'll also have them to teach to small groups if they want to get started teaching, which I encourage people to do, is to start small, start with a group of 2 or 3, family or friends. You've got the piece of paper and the words in front of you. You teach it, you make mistakes, you learn, and people start getting results, and then they'll tell their friends, and then all of a sudden your classes grow, and you want them to grow organically like that. And you're constantly gathering feedback from them, and that's a huge part of this training, is learning how to garner feedback from the students in your room. So you're learning as they're learning, and you're getting to know their bodies and speaking to what you see. And that kind of organic growth is really great. So 4 6-day weekends. Each day we have 2 classes. There's some anatomy as it applies to this yoga. Nobody's going to have to go learn all the muscles in the body or something like that. We learn anatomy as it relates to the classes and the poses we do. We learn the physiology that underlies the power and the benefits of the yoga. And we study the philosophy that we talked about so much here at the beginning. And that's a gentle, it's all gentle, you know, there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of interaction. I love questions. I like when students ask questions, and sometimes, you know, a question will kind of lead us into a little tangent, a little powerful learning opportunity, but then we come right back into the subject matter, and that's the group dynamics work.
So I understand also that you're offering it in 2 ways. right? So there are two, same training, but accessing the training is different depending on the kind of certification you want. Can you explain that?
Yes, it's we are a 203-hour Yoga Alliance school. So the, are you getting an echo, Marcy?
No.
Okay, that's just me, I guess. We're a 300-hour Yoga Alliance school, and so those who would like to have the Yoga Alliance certification need to be present basically for all six of the weekends. If you already have a Yoga Alliance certification, or if you plan to teach on your own and don't want to work for a school, or somehow you don't feel like the certification is important, then you have the option to take three out of the six weekends remotely. And I have this really great technology that has high-quality video conferencing capabilities. So you, for example, if you want to stay in Boston, you would feel like you're in the room because you see everything that we see, and we get to see you on a large TV screen. And I've seen this work, and it works really nicely. So we still feel all-inclusive for anybody who wants to kind of participate remotely. They'll be able to see the classes that I teach, but more importantly, you'll be able to hear the classes, because once the class begins, there's nothing to see. You just, you basically go inside and you practice.
It sounds great. Absolutely great. Well, I think that there are probably lots who are listening who are doing as I'm doing, you know, and really I can feel my heart, you know, just drawing to this practice. And I encourage you to go to Jeff's website. Can you repeat that again, Jeff?
Yeah, yogaloftboulder.com. And there's a link that says yoga, and there you'll find all the content that explains the teacher training. I've put a lot of thought into how to explain this as best I can and give you a clear idea of what the training is all about. But there's contact information there. If people have questions, they can email, or we can set up a little phone call like this and be sure that people get their questions answered so they feel comfortable making a decision.
Great. And will all the classes be in the Boulder location? I know the Gun Barrel location, which is new.
Yeah.
Is that also part of where the training will take place, or will it all be in one location?
I've thought about it there, but I think it'll all be at the Boulder location. It's where I've taught in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super comfortable teaching there, and the views are fantastic, as you know, and it's just a great facility for teacher training.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm finishing my practice, it's those flat irons that come into my mind's eye. Just as if
it's
I'm
one of the
looking.
Best views in Boulder.
Oh, it's just incredible. I still see them right in front of me. And I feel, of course, perfectly at home. So it's wonderful.
That's sweet. Yeah.
One more thing before we close. I do want to ask you to please talk about your book a little bit. I know you mentioned the Yoga Sutras, you know, as we were discussing the development of your program, but tell us about the book.
Yeah, I had a call that I had to just put the voicemail. Can you ask the question again, Marcy?
Sure. So I just wanted you to share a few words about your book. As I said,
oh, the book. Yeah.
Yeah, as I said earlier, what happened during our discussion is that we talked about the Yoga Sutras just very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about your book, because I know that it plays a huge part in the program itself, right? Philosophy.
Yeah,
and...
Well, everybody gets a book, and we go through the Yoga Sutras, and I guess rather than oftentimes in a teacher training, the Yoga Sutras become they become talking points, and everybody's kind of free to give them their own meaning. And as I alluded to earlier, Solving the riddle of life, why we're here, is a puzzle. And there are great minds, Patanjali himself, Socrates, Lao Tzu, Confucius, you know, these great minds that we've all known and loved, but if we take their words and make them our own, we miss the point. And so the only thing that I tend to do is I kind of hold fast. I want us to really think we have to crawl inside their minds, because they knew a truth that they wanted us to know that set them free. And the same truth will set us free.
Mm.
And so that's what we do. We have to hold everything to that light of truth. Because the moment you make your own agenda, in some way it becomes self-sabotaging. If not in the moment, then eventually it will start to eat you up. And it's never too late. It's never too late to start to do this work. And begin that process of deep self-acceptance and understanding. All you got to do is want a better way.
Mm.
And so that's what the Yoga Sutras are all about. They're about, sutras means, the Yoga Sutras are threads of truth. And they're basically a series of kind of like bullet points from probably a much larger conversation. Patanjali was the first to take thousands and thousands and thousands of pages and reduce them down to what we might consider like a Reader's Digest version.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to unpack them. We have to look at those and we unpack them. And so there's lots of good, rich conversation that comes out of that. And quite literally, the light starts to go on for us. And ultimately, it's not the book, it's not the sutras, it's what they point to, and it's that shared knowledge that we really want more than anything. Mm. And that becomes our guide. So
the truth.
Well, yeah, we do.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. I know that our audience has loved listening to you as I have. As I said earlier in the program, there's just something so special about you. And it is how your heart just reaches out into everything that you do. And I'm sure that those...
Yeah.
Who have listened to our conversation today can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that they will take advantage of being able to experience it and join in this teacher training. Look into it. Really give yourself this gift of really truly being able to integrate your body and your healed mind. I love the way you use that phrase,
mm-hmm.
Your healed mind.
Yeah.
And the heart,
yeah.
Of course, that is
yeah.
The foundation for it all. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Marcy. Yeah, it's really exciting. And I do hope any listener out there that has if this creates a little spark of optimism or possibility or potential in their heart, that they follow through on that and trust that voice that says, this could be something that I want to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
And like you said, no prerequisites. So you made it pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. It's easy.
Yeah, it's easy. So again, thank you so much. And thank you all for being here and being part of our conversation. We, of course, would love to have your comments, your questions, anything at all that you would like to discuss, leave them down below. And if you have any questions directly for either Jeff or I, please email us. You can reach Jeff at theyogaloft.com. And of course, me at theheartshiftcoach.com.
My email address Yeah, my email, if anybody wants to email me, is Jeff, J-E-F-F, at yogaloftboulder.com. That's fine.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Many blessings to you all, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcy. Namaste.
Namaste.